You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hi, I'm Mike Troy, host of the American Revolution Podcast on the Airwave Media Network. This podcast is the origin story of the United States, how we went from colonies ruled by a king to the democratic republic that we have today. The American Revolution Podcast tells the story of the revolution from beginning to end. Please subscribe for free. We're available on all major podcast platforms. I hope you will join me today on the American Revolution Podcast.
Happy Women's History Month. For this episode, we're going to take a blast to the past, back to one of my favorite episodes and one of the first episodes of the Redacted History Podcast. Remember back 2 years ago, if you're a Redacted History OG, when we did a two-part series on Josephine Baker. Josephine Baker was a Black woman, a Renaissance woman. Her life went from growing up in the Jim Crow South in St. Louis, Missouri, to dancing and performing on Broadway, to dancing and performing in Europe, to aiding the French resistance during World War II, and to finally making massive contributions to the civil rights movement right here in the United States of America. For anybody that's new to the podcast, you're going to enjoy this one. And if you heard this episode 2 years ago, allow me to reintroduce you to Josephine Baker. Happy Women's History Month. What if I told you that Black Americans did in fact receive reparations after slavery? Okay, that would be a lie. Now, what if I told you that in the early 20th century, the most powerful entertainer in Paris was an American-born Black woman who used her fame and the art of seduction to spy for the French military resistance during World War II? Well, that would be the truth. This is the story of Josephine Baker, and this is the Redacted History Podcast. So, hey, it's been a while. Last time we were together, we told the story of Mary Bowser, an enslaved Black woman who was given her freedom and proceeded to spy for the Union Army during the Civil War. Definitely go check that episode out if you haven't already. But today, we're going to fast forward the clock about a half a century to 1906, where the story of Josephine Baker begins. Josephine Baker is arguably the most interesting woman that lived in the 20th century. Have you ever heard of her? Everyone I talk to has never heard of her. Josephine Baker was an entertainer, a sex symbol. Matter of fact, she was the foremost sex symbol for Black women in the 20th century. She was an icon, a civil rights activist, a hustler, a survivor, and a World War II spy. Her story, like many stories of Black women from the last couple hundred years, went untold. And not for lack of documentation. There's plenty of documentation on Josephine Baker out there. So let's change that. Sit back, relax, and let's get into the show. The Redacted History Podcast is brought to you by Patreon. This is where you can get behind the scenes looks at the show. You can vote on what the next show topic will be, live streams, and much, much more. Go to patreon.com/blackout, BLACKKOUT. And open your purse. I promise it won't hurt. Let's get back to the show. America, 1906. We're 40 years removed from the end of the Civil War and the emancipation of enslaved African Americans. And we are in the midst of Jim Crow and the Black Codes, a host of racial and segregationist laws meant to disenfranchise and marginalize Black Americans. Because of this, we're seeing the beginning of the Great Migration, the movement of over 6 million African Americans out of the rural Jim Crow South to Northeast, Midwest, and Western parts of the country. Talk to any of your Black friends or peers that are from, like, the North, Michigan, think New York, think Ohio. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and I know for a fact that my family in the early 20th century moved from Mississippi, North Carolina to Arkansas, Cleveland, Ohio, Chicago, Illinois. So that's the Great Migration right there. Black people were fleeing the racial terror of Jim Crow South to the North, to the Midwest, to the West. That's where you see a lot of black communities rise up in Compton, California, Los Angeles, things of that nature. Though they were escaping the nightmare that was the Jim Crow South, many black Americans would find out that the infection that was racism had spread itself across the nation. And one of these places that African Americans moved was St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis was a rapidly growing city by the end of the 19th century. It had survived a cholera epidemic. It survived fires that tried to burn down the city. And that epidemic that I just mentioned killed 4,000 people, which was a lot at the time. St. Louis at the time was what we'd call a modern-day melting pot. By 1900, there were 575,000 people in the city of all races, and 35,000 of them were black. Josephine Baker was born Freda J. McDonald on June 3, 1906. She adopted the name Josephine from her aunt. Her childhood was volatile from the very beginning. She was born to a woman named Caroline, or Carrie for short. Carrie was a black woman who was adopted in 1886 in Little Rock, Arkansas, by a black family. Her adopted mother was a black woman named Elvira, who was a former enslaved woman on a tobacco farm in Arkansas. She was of African and Native American descent. Now, it was never confirmed who Josephine's birth father was, but it was rumored to be a white man in town named Edward. The rumors were because Josephine was, of course, noticeably a little lighter than her mother and her siblings. Now, she was still clearly a black woman, but this lighter skin gave her a proximity to whiteness in the eyes of her family and other black people. Josephine spent her early years in the Mill Creek Valley neighborhood in St. Louis, raised in an extended family by her mother, stepfather, aunt, and her grandparents. The neighborhood was a mixed-race, low-income neighborhood with a plethora of low-income housing, brothels, drug houses, saloons, and houses that had no plumbing. Her mother married a forever unemployed man named Arthur Martin, and together they had two more daughters and a son, Josephine's step-siblings. Most of her childhood was spent fending for herself because her mother absolutely resented her. Josephine was born out of wedlock to her mother, Carrie, and the townsfolk looked at Carrie as promiscuous. And Carrie saw Josephine's existence as a reminder of that, not to mention, you know, the whole you're lighter than me, proximity to whiteness thing. Josephine had to grow up fast and spent most of her time skipping school and frolicking, dancing, singing music in the streets. At the age of 8, she began doing maid work and served as a live-in domestic maid for white families in the community to help her family make ends meet. And some of these white families, as you could imagine, were not very nice to her. One woman going on as far to burn Josephine's hands in boiling water because the little girl put too much soap in the laundry. Josephine would find that she couldn't find real love wherever she looked. White people, no love. Her family, no love. Her mother, no love. And she experienced the hatred that the world could really hold when she witnessed the St. Louis riots of 1917. It was the year 1917. Josephine was 11 years old. The East St. Louis riots of 1917 were labor-related violence perpetrated by white Americans. Between 29 and 150 black people were murdered and another 6,000 were left homeless. And I'm sure those numbers are a lot higher than what the records state. Let's look at some context. The First World War is happening in Europe, and many of the able-bodied white men that typically held down the jobs on the American front were in the Great Fight. It just so happened that the First World War coincided with the Great Migration because don't forget, black people were still fleeing racial terror in the South because white people were ambidextrous. They could multitask. They could fight a war in Europe and still terrorize black people in America. Priorities. Black people were also incentivized to travel to North and Midwest cities because there were open jobs. And in the North and the Midwest, including St. Louis, there were a lot of industrial jobs, high-paying jobs that typically went to these white men, but they were over in Europe getting put on T-shirts. Black people at this time were arriving in St. Louis by a clip of 2,000 people a week. Many white workers were on strike to get better labor conditions, and they weren't just going to let black people come in and take their jobs from up under them. The tension boiled over on May 28, 1917, when white mobs marched into black districts and began to burn homes, churches, saloons. They shot black women and children in the street and lynched black men. The violence extended from May to July. On July 3, 1917, a reporter from Post-Dispatch of St. Louis wrote, "For an hour and a half last evening, I saw the massacre of helpless Negroes at Broadway and 4th Street in downtown East St. Louis, where black skin was a death warrant." Josephine saw all of this. She watched the burning houses in East St. Louis on a bridge. She was quoted saying, "I can still see myself standing on the west bank of the Mississippi, looking over into East St. Louis and watching the glow of the burning Negro homes lighting the sky. We children stood huddled together in bewilderment, frightened to death with the screams of the Negro families running across the bridge with nothing but what they had on their backs as their worldly belongings. So with this vision, I ran and ran and ran." And it was almost time for Josephine to run her race.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Around her adolescent years, life got even harder for Josephine. Her mother basically disowned her. She spent a lot of times doing odd jobs, sleeping on street corners, dancing on the street for money, you name it. At the age of 12, she officially dropped out of school, and at the age of 13, she was married. To the discontent of her mother. Let me say that again. At the age of 13, she was married. She was married to a man named Willie Wells, who was damn near 30 years old, and they met at a chauffeur's club. It was around this time that Josephine found escape in music, dancing, and performing. She would escape to the black-owned theater in town, dancing in the rafters, practicing and daydreaming of when she would be one of the girls on stage. She spent her time mimicking all the moves, obsessing over the dresses and the feathers. She wanted it so badly. It was at this time she became even more discontent with her life in St. Louis. She no longer wanted to work for white people. She experienced sexual assault for a man that she was working for, a local man in town. And it turned out that her happiness, or whatever she found with Willie, was short-lived along with their marriage. They married in 1919 and they divorced in 1919. After her divorce from Willie, the predator, she found her place in her first traveling band. She married her second husband, Howard Baker, in 1921 at the age of 15. This was actually her first legal marriage because in St. Louis at the time, you couldn't get married at the age of 13. Duh. 15 is still no better. But she and Mr. Baker would eventually divorce a few years later, but she kept his last name for the rest of her life. She eventually convinced the show manager in St. Louis to let her into a traveling vaudeville group. She became part of shows that traveled the Midwest and the East. She went to Memphis, Chicago, Philadelphia, and finally New York City while encountering racism and challenges all along. While traveling with these vaudeville dance groups, sometimes she would get flack and bullying from the other girls because they felt threatened by her. She was more charismatic and a better dancer than them, and she wasn't afraid to take risks. She would appear in chorus lines where each dancer would have to do the same moves, nothing special, nothing that really set the women apart from each other. But Josephine would make her own moves, because that's just the way that she was. She would even go as far as dressing in blackface, I don't recommend that, to make the audience laugh. Remember, it was the 1920s. In 1923, Josephine caught the eye of the Broadway production Shuffle Along, which was the first hit all-black Broadway show ever. It set the tone for Black Broadway. She failed her first audition for the show, not due to lack of talent, but the composers said that she was too dark. But nevertheless, she prevailed and made the show. And when she was officially on Broadway, and then she was officially on Broadway. After Shuffle Along ended, she joined a show called The Chocolate Dandies. She was doing the majority of her work on Broadway during the Harlem Renaissance, which was a revival of black music, dance, art, fashion, literature, theater, politics, and scholarship based out of Harlem, Manhattan, New York City in the 1920s and 30s. She was a hit on Broadway and her star was constantly ascending, but she wasn't quite famous yet, or at least as famous as she wanted to be. She would become a true icon, not in the United States, not St. Louis, not New York, not Philadelphia or Chicago or Memphis. She would become a true icon in Paris. Her comedic touch and willingness to do mostly anything for a crowd reaction made her a fan favorite all over. There were occasions where the shows that she was in would travel back to St. Louis and she would avoid her mother because she did not want to see the look of disappointment on her face. It was during these times that Josephine realized that there was nothing left for her in America. Racism was still running rampant and her own mother wanted absolutely nothing to do with her. In her youth, Carrie was a dancer and had aspirations of being a showgirl, and this probably led to some of more of the discontent that she had for Josephine. Maybe it was jealousy. Josephine's half-sister Margaret once said that her mother was once the most popular girl at the dance halls on Sundays, and Josephine was living that dream out. In 1925, France was obsessed with American jazz and all things exotic. And Josephine knew this, and she figured that she could only get but so far in America. She figured she can only get so far in American entertainment as long as politics and racism has something to do with it. So she packed up her things and caught a boat to Paris, France. And that is where things get interesting. Okay, let's review. Josephine Baker was born into poverty in June of 1906 in St. Louis, Missouri. Life was hard, very hard. But what more could you expect for the life of a little black girl born during the height of Jim Crow into a country who didn't love her? So she made a way out of poverty, got married as a teenager twice, and found a love for dancing and entertaining a crowd by any means necessary. And she eventually realized that neither the United States nor her family really loved her. So she needed to find a way to find a new love. A new place to accept her. And that place was Paris, France. I'm Andre, and this is the Redacted History Podcast. And this is the story of Josephine Baker. Josephine Baker sailed to Paris in 1925 at the age of 19 years old. In a 1974 interview, Josephine credited Paris with being the place that gave her her first big break. Paris is where her star truly ascended, and she felt what love truly felt like. Yes, she was on Broadway previously in New York, but this was when she was simply a chorus girl, made to do the same moves of all the other girls. You know what a chorus girl is, where you're in a line together and your arms are interlocked and you kick up. One, two. You know what I'm talking about? Okay. Josephine enjoyed life in Paris a lot. She rocked the stages and became instantly famous for being one of the first Black Americans to travel to Paris. And she became widely renowned for dancing practically nude on stage. And remember, this is the 1920s. Women in the United States are just now getting the right to vote. Like, prohibition is going on. It's almost illegal to drink alcohol. And Josephine is breaking every single barrier. She's a woman, she's a black woman, and she's a black woman who does not care. She became even more popular for dancing practically nude, wearing a skirt made of bananas. Simply iconic. Baker spent the rest of the 1920s entertaining the Parisians and touring the European continent. She actually became the first African American to visit Yugoslavia. Baker went on to dabble in singing and movies. She starred in four different movies that found success in Europe. She was truly being immersed in everything she loved, music and animals. In 1930, she was actually gifted a pet cheetah named Chiquita, and she would take on leisurely strolls around the city with the cheetah to the excitement and horror of some Parisians. Paris is where she truly became the iconic sex symbol that she's remembered for today. It is rumored that at one point, she had over 1,000 marriage proposals. Despite her massive star power in Paris, Josephine was not received this well at home in the past or the future, really. Time magazine, based out of New York City, referred to her as a Negro wench whose talent might be topped outside of Paris. That's just pure hating. Other critics in America said her voice was too thin and dwarf-like. Comments like these and her past experiences, or lack thereof, in America led to her abandoning her American citizenship and became a full citizen of France. No wonder why she left America. American audiences, and by audiences in America, I mean white, these audiences cannot conceptualize a successful black woman entertainer who spoke French being so captivating. I mean, look at America at that moment in time. It would be another 40 years before black people became free on paper. After World War I ended, instability all across Europe was created as a result. And that instability set the stage for a cataclysmic showdown just 20 years later. And this time, it would be even more devastating than the first time. Taking advantage of an economically and morally debilitated Germany, Adolf Hitler rose to power with the intentions of world domination. Over the next 6 years, the conflict would take more lives and destroy more land and property around the globe than any previous war. Among the estimated 45 to 60 million people killed were 6 million Jewish people murdered in Nazi concentration camps as part of Hitler's diabolical final solution, now known as the Holocaust. Hitler had long planned an invasion of Poland, which was a country that France had pledged its military allegiance to. And on September 17, 1939, Germany did just that, and the Second Great War was on. By September 1st, the German army had already annexed Austria and marched into Poland. France believed that it was protected from invasion by the Maginot Line, a system of underground bunkers, munitions dumps, and power stations. It stretched across the northeastern frontier of the country. Hitler and his forces would eventually get around this line, but not for another 9 months. Josephine and her comrades actually spent time at the Maginot Line, entertaining the brave troops who were commanded to guard it. For the soldiers, she sang and danced on and on, and the soldiers loved it and cheered raucously. Many of these soldiers had never been to Paris. They were from poor villages, some without electricity, but they had most certainly heard about Josephine Baker. This would be like me being in the military right now and watching a tennis match of Serena Williams. Josephine and her entertaining comrades continued to do things to keep the minds of the Parisians off the war by doing more shows and entertaining at the Casino de Paris. They say when Josephine was on stage singing, any soldier in the crowd would believe that she was singing directly to him. Josephine had grown to love her adopted country and wanted to use this opportunity while it was at war to show her gratitude and affection through entertainment. However, she would find a way to serve her new country in a much different fashion. And it all started with a man named Jacques Apty. Jacques was an officer working with the Douzième Bureau. Listen, if my French is off in this podcast, please forgive me. The Douzième Bureau was a French military intelligence service at the beginning of the war. His job was to enlist people who wanted to fight for France covertly for free. These people would be called honorable correspondents. It was suggested to Jacques that he give Josephine a try because they said she was more French than the French. Apty set up a meeting with Josephine to gauge whether or not this would be something that she was interested in, and let's just say that it did not take much convincing. After all, this was the same woman who had been in France for 15 years at this point. She had been there almost more time than she had been an American, and her identity was that of the Parisians. And this was the same woman who watched the St. Louis riots of 1917 in person. She watched black people have their houses burned down and be slain in the streets. Nothing could scare her, and honestly, she loved a thrill. When Jacques approached her, she said, "France made me what I am. The Parisians gave me their hearts, and I am ready to give them my life." Josephine was excited to get started and quickly made Apty aware of her knowledge and connections to Italian diplomats and Japanese ties to France. She had secretly and previously supported Benito Mussolini, but kept that error in judgment to herself. She had ideas to go to receptions at Italian and Japanese embassies in France to extract whatever information she could concerning the war and the movement of the Axis powers. And no one would ever bat an eye. After all, she was the most famous woman in Paris. Whenever Josephine would go to these parties to wine and dine herself amongst the rich diplomats and hide in plain sight, she would extract information and write it on the palms of her hands. Very sneaky, Josephine. Very sneaky. Sometimes she would actually write notes on the inner sleeves of her shirts and on she would write coded messages and notes and things of that nature onto music and scorecard sheets. Towards the end of 1939, Josephine became increasingly busy, performing at the casino every night, doing a radio show on the weekends, filming movies, and still spying for the French resistance. The coolest thing to me about her spying endeavors is that she would sometimes do so behind enemy lines. Towards May of 1940, the Germans continued to make their advances through Europe, and refugees flocked into Europe. Josephine would spend the little downtime that she had writing letters to soldiers in war and going to shelters to comfort refugees, make beds, and comfort whoever needed it. The worst was really yet to come in terms of the war. The Germans were going to eventually take Paris, and Jacques warned Josephine of this. He warned Josephine to pack her things and immediately get out of Paris and to go to the south of France. She instead packed her things and went to the southeast of France, but at least she got out of Paris. And on June 14, 1940, they entered the city without firing a shot. After the German invasion of France, she would house French refugees and provide them with visas. As an entertainer, Baker had an excuse for moving around Europe, visiting neutral nations such as Portugal, as well as some in South America. She carried information for transmission to England about airfields, harbor, and German troop concentrations in the west of France, and more information about Axis power movements. In 1941, she and her entourage went to the French colonies in North Africa. She used North Africa as a base to further tour Europe and use her celebrity as a means to continue to siphon information out of important people. She spent several years as a simultaneous spy, comforter, movie star, radio star, and a dancer and entertainer. She was literally doing it all in like a 3-year run. In August of 1944, let's fast forward a little bit, the German forces were retreating and the Parisians rejoiced. With the ending of the war in Paris came Josephine's return from North Africa, and it was said that at this point, she was more French than King Louis. The Parisians knew of her work and sacrifice during the war. People would tell her, "It was very nice of you to save France, Josephine." For her courageous wartime service to France, she was awarded the Cross of Lorraine by General Charles de Gaulle in 1943, as well as the Legion of Honor and the Croix de Guerre in 1961. And I don't have to tell you how World War II ended, but maybe we'll get into that in another episode.
Some of us love history. Others used to or never did because history was presented as nothing but the rote memorization of names, dates, and facts. Basically, the story got left out, and that made history kind of suck. My name is Greg Jackson. I'm a university professor with a PhD in history, and bringing history to life is my passion. That's why I created my podcast, History That Doesn't Suck. I want to teach you everything you need to know about U.S. history, but I do so through stories. Let me tell you about George Washington begging his men not to mutiny against Congress. Clara Barton saving Union soldiers amid enemy fire. Enslaved Frederick Douglass risking his life for liberty, and about so many other figures as their real experiences make industrialization, social movements, and even congressional debates and tax policy come to life. Subscribe to History That Doesn't Suck today, and join me, Professor Greg Jackson, every other week for a new episode, where I'd like to tell you a story.
In the later years of her life, activism and the fight for civil rights became a huge part of Josephine's life. In 1963, she spoke at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom to deliver a speech on her experience as a black woman and entertainer. Josephine would make more trips back to the United States during the 1950s and 60s, but refused to perform in front of segregated audiences and would demand equal treatment as an elite entertainer at the venues she went to. During her time campaigning for civil rights, she actually began to adopt children of different ethnicities. She wanted to prove that children of different races could be brothers and sisters. She raised 2 daughters and 10 sons, and they all hailed from different countries: France, Japan, Morocco, Algeria, Ivory, Colombia, Finland, and Venezuela. Here's a quote from her speech at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. "I am not a young woman now, friends. My life is behind me. There is not too much fire burning inside me. And before it goes out, I want you to use what is left to light that fire in you so you can carry on and so that you can do these things that I have done. Then, when my fires have burned out and I go where we all go someday, I can be happy." Josephine's last performance was on April 8, 1975. She died 4 days later on April 12, 1975, in bed of a cerebral hemorrhage of her brain. Ironically enough, surrounding her body were newspapers, love letters, and headlines of people adoring her and speculating a potential comeback. She had been reading these love letters when she collapsed. At age 68, Josephine Baker was gone. She received a full Catholic funeral in Paris, the only African-American woman born to receive full French military honors at her funeral. Her funeral was the occasion of a huge procession. Thousands, I'm talking like 20,000 mourners turned out for Josephine. Her last true performance. She was buried exactly 50 years to the day that she first danced on a stage in Paris in 1925. Isn't that crazy? 50 years to the day. So, how do we remember Josephine Baker? I remember her as a trailblazer way before her time. A woman with enough courage to defy the odds bestowed upon her from birth to become a superstar. Let's be honest. You're born in Jim Crow, 1906, St. Louis, Missouri. The odds are stacked against you. You're a woman as well. You're a black woman. The odds are stacked against you. And Josephine Baker was never supposed to make it, but she did. And over the course of the 68 magnificent years that she lived, she packed 10 lifetimes worth of experiences of legacy into one lifetime. She was a mother, a radio star, a movie star, a superstar, a dancer, an entertainer, a singer, and a fighter. After her death, she's been honored over the last several decades with honors such as an induction into the Hall of Missourians in 1995 and a spot on the St. Louis Walk of Fame. There has been several biographies written about her, even one written by her adopted son, Jean. She's been documented beautifully and fondly. I hate that a woman so great who lived such a magnificent and extraordinary life didn't truly get her flowers from those who mattered while she was here. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, peace. If you're still listening, I want you to know that I truly appreciate you. Let me know your thoughts with a review and a rating. It truly goes a long way. Thank you.